We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different. This is Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky coming to you from my home in Northfield, Minnesota, and I have with me
Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark coming to you from my office at Ascension Lutheran Church in beautiful South St. Louis.
And are you ready, Matt? Because here we go. Here we go. My country, tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside, let freedom ring. Yes, this is our Labor Day episode, Matt.
Oh, God. Well, yeah. Thanks, Sean. So, yeah, I mean, 10 seconds before we hit record, John goes, do you know My Country, Tis of Thee? Well, yeah. Well, we're going to sing it. So, yeah, as you could tell, we did not rehearse that.
Like rehearsal would have helped. But, no, I just wanted to know if you knew the song. We attended a concert with Garrison Keillor, who is also was many, many years on the National Public Radio, had a show. And so it was his 84th birthday. And he's a Minnesotan, and so they celebrated that in St. Paul. And that's what he did. He started singing that. And the whole audience, he didn't invite them to, he didn't instruct them to, but the whole audience just joined singing with him.
And that's pretty cool. Spontaneous singing.
Spontaneous. And I thought with this being Labor Day here in the United States, which is one of our national holidays, that we would sing it. But here's my concern. That was so beautiful. It brought tears to my eyes because there were all kinds of people there, you know. I'm sure all kinds of different groups and whether Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and yet we all sang that song, and I'm wondering, do you think the kids, do they know that song, My Country, Tis of Thee?
Yeah, I don't know, John. I don't know either. Yeah.
So if you are a younger person listening to us, I ask you, do you know My Country, Tis of Thee? And if you're an older person, a cranky old senior like myself, ask your kids, ask your grandkids if they remember that song. Because I wonder if that isn't part of our problem in our country. We had the America the Beautiful, we sang too, Matt. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that isn't part of our problem. We had these things that reminded us, okay, we got our differences, we have our arguments, and they're important. I'm not saying they aren't. And yet at the same time, we all knew that we were Americans. And that meant something to be an American, you know, even with all the differences we have. Well, anyway, I just, with it being Labor Day, I thought it would be fun to do that.
You bet. Oh, thanks, John.
So,
I'm sure our listeners were singing along with.
Well, I hope they were. I hope that would be cool, wouldn't
it? Me too.
To think that they were. Now we need to get back onto biblical material, although I think there might be a commonality here because it's about having unity and understanding and finding out that one of the greatest of all the disciples maybe didn't have unity and understanding. So there can be differences, but Jesus can help solve that. Where do you want to go, Matt? I'm going to
John, let's look at Matthew chapter 16. Okay. We're going to begin with verse 13 for our listeners if they want to follow along. This is a well-known, I think, to many, section of scripture. We call it Peter's confession. He confesses Jesus as the Christ. Spoiler alert, that's a good confession. But boy, there is a lot in this text. So let's walk through it together, John, and unpack it a little bit for folks, because I think there's some misunderstandings when it comes to this text too that we want to address. All right. So let's jump in.
I'm good at misunderstanding, so this is exciting for me.
Yeah, there you go. So Matthew 16, let's just start with verse 13.
How far do you want me to read?
Well, just verse. Let's just do that one verse.
Oh, okay. Well, very good. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?"
Okay. All right. Good. So, yeah, the Son of Man. You know, so that's another title for Jesus. Yep. So, you know, Jesus essentially asking, "Well, who do people say that I am?" Right.
Right.
And just this broad question: Who do people say that I am? And I think that's a question that is worth us asking today too, right? So if Jesus were to come to us, and if he were to come to our church, this group of his followers, and he said, "Well, who do people today say that I am?" You know, how would we answer that question? And maybe it plays into, you know, the whole "My country, 'tis of thee," and our nation, John. You know, here in the United States, in our context, yeah, who do people say that Jesus is? And I don't know. Do you have an answer to that? Or
well, if you don't mind, I'll refer back to what we were talking about last Saturday. The fact that there were some people that would say, "Oh, he's a great miracle worker." You know, there's others that, "Oh, he should be the next king. We need a good earthly king like this." And then, of course, there were some who, like Peter, then understood, "Oh, there's more than a king. There's more than a super miracle worker here. This is God himself that has come amongst us."
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. No, I think similar sentiments today. No doubt about it. I think, too, of Muslims, if you ask them. Yeah, they like Jesus. He's a prophet in their eyes.
Oh, yeah.
A messenger.
Yeah.
They wouldn't say he's the Son of God. They wouldn't say that he died on a cross, even. But they're all in favor of Jesus.
Who doesn't like Jesus?
Well, yeah. Who doesn't like Jesus? Well, right, the Hindus.
The devil, maybe.
Well, yeah, the devil, for one. Yeah. We have a number of Nepalese families in our congregation. They're coming out of a context in Nepal that is almost entirely Hindu.
Yeah.
The Hindu is kind of interesting. They've got thousands of gods. And so they're pretty open to Jesus too, you know, just, he sounds pretty great. Let's add him to the list. And he becomes seriously.
Add him to the list.
One of many in this whole pantheon of gods. So I think you're right, John. I think what did you say? You know, who doesn't like Jesus, right?
Yeah.
If you were to ask someone in the U.S. today, I think almost without a doubt, people would be like, "Oh, yeah. Yeah,
we like
Jesus.
Jesus
is a good guy, good teacher, and there's some good things about him." And I've watched The Chosen before, and he looks pretty handsome, that Jesus character. So, I also think, John, that perhaps that's one of the devil's greatest tricks.
Yes, right? I agree with you.
Because, he wants us to be a fan of Jesus. You know, he wants us to think Jesus is, maybe just one of many gods, or just a teacher, or a prophet, or whatever. Satan's fine with us thinking those things. You know, he wants us to think well of Jesus. What he doesn't want us to think or believe is that Jesus is the Son of God, the Christ, the Savior. He doesn't want us to think that, but no, he's cool with us thinking that Jesus is a good guy, you know.
Yes, as the bumper sticker says, if you love Jesus, honk.
Yeah, so I know everyone's honking. Everyone loves Jesus. But it's not just about Jesus being a good guy, but it's about him being so much more.
Yeah.
But that's important for us to think about, you know, and, you know, why is that? You know, why is it important for us to think about what people say about Jesus? I think one reason it's important is for our own Christian witness, right?
Yeah.
As we share Christ with others, knowing what those around us think about Jesus, that helps us. Because we could say a whole lot about Jesus. We could talk about Jesus for hours, right? Especially us pastors. But when you know the person you're speaking to, that shapes what you say about Jesus. Because we could say all sorts of true things about him, but when we know where that person's coming from, that that hopefully, again, shapes the conversation and what it is that we articulate about who Jesus is. So, yeah, anyway, John, yeah. So that opening question that Jesus asked, important then, but I think important for us today, too, as Christians, to consider, who do people say Jesus is?
Do you think there's, why does he say that? Why does he say, who do people say that I am? Why does he say, who do people say the Son of Man is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Why does he refer to himself as the Son of Man? Well, I think perhaps part of it might be just affirming that, well, he is indeed the Son of Man. You know, Jesus is, in, by using that name for himself, sort of bearing testimony about who he is. Yeah, I mean, it's just one thought.
Well, you know, it's interesting that, that I had not thought about before. Later on in Peter's confession that we haven't got to is that you're the Son of the living God. So, so it's kind of, I never realized in this text, we have the affirmation of those two great doctrines that have been fought over since the beginning with Christianity. He is true God, but he's also true man. I personally always liked that I'm the Son of Man business because years ago, my in-laws were truck drivers. Klingberg Trucking, they're still out there if you need your asphalt needs or oil. They'll take care of you. And one of the things that made me very happy is one Christmas, they gave me a Klingberg Trucking jacket to wear. And it was like, oh, okay, I'm, you know, here's this puny pastor guy, and yet now I'm part of this whole family. So I was lucky when Jesus said, I'm a Son of Man too. But, okay, well, go ahead, Matt. I just got off the side there.
Yeah, sort of bookends Jesus affirming he is the Son of Man, right? But also... Yeah. Peter affirming, as we'll see, that he is the Son of God, the living God. Yeah, God and man. I like that. So that's the question, and then the disciples answer, right? And what people are saying about Jesus is kind of a mixed bag, so then and today. So if you want to read verse 14.
And then they said, some say John the Baptist. And in fact, that was a very popular opinion, wasn't it? That's what Herod thought, that the Baptist had been reincarnated, you think? Others say Elijah, others that Jeremiah are one of the prophets.
Yeah, so this is belief among Jews that, when Messiah comes, right, that there's going to be a reappearance of some of the prophets. And remember on the cross, Jesus is dying, and they even say, oh, listen, he's calling Elijah, you know. This is a common belief at that time. So that's what people were saying about Jesus. You know, maybe, like you said, maybe he's John back from the dead, or maybe he's Elijah reincarnated, or whatever the case might be. All sorts of opinions about Jesus. Yeah. So then, as important as the question is, who do people say that I am? Here's the more important one, right? But who do you say that I am? There in verse 15.
And that, of course, is the question that each and every one of us has to wrestle with. It's not what Matt believes, not what John believes, but what you believe, what you say.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of interesting, you know, that it's lost in the English, but who do you say that I am? That's a plural you. So he's talking to the whole group of disciples.
Yeah.
You know, who do you all say that I am? Or here's St. Louis would be more like, who do you guys say that I am? Or yous.
So he's talking to the whole group.
But to your point, John, that's a question that as individuals, we each have to answer as well. And we see that with Peter. Peter answering, you know, on behalf of himself, certainly, but also in a way answering on behalf of the disciples, speaking up as Peter so often does.
I appreciate you bringing up the fact that is the plural there, you all, because it is important what we believe personally, but it's beyond that because we're a church, we're a unity, right? So it also depends on what we all have to say,
Yeah, and that's what I love, you know, when we confess the words of the creed together, right?
Oh, yeah.
And when we do that together, who do we say Jesus is? Well, we're gonna say it. I believe in Jesus Christ, the only begotten Son of God, begotten of, you know, and then we confess that faith together. And I think it's just one thing that always strikes me is that those words of the creeds, and think of the apostles, Nicene in particular, spoken by Christians down through the centuries. But also spoken by Christians around the world today. I love that idea that as we're speaking those words on a Sunday morning, so also are people across the United States and literally around the world. So, Yeah. Who do you church say that I am? Well, you know, here it is. We're confessing it.
So you and I sing My Country Tis of Thee, because that's the thing that unites us as Americans. But as this show is, could be heard by anybody in the world, you're right, as Christians, we have things we say that unites all of us as Christians, even though we might come from all kinds of different countries.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This the Holy Christian Church, it's unbound by borders. We're united in this confession. Well, really, this confession we're about to hear from Peter. So if you want to read Peter's response to who do you say I am in verses 16 and 17.
Simon Peter replied, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven."
Yeah, so Peter's answer, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God," you know. And Jesus is happy with that response, right? "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah." And good answer, faithful answer, right? But, you know, that's, again, Peter's confession, but, you know, in a way, the confession of all the disciples. Because I think of John, you know, the end of his gospel. What does he say? "These things are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God." Yeah. So he uses almost the exact same words. So John believes it too, in his, you know, and writes it in his gospel. So, I mean, this is the faith, this is the confession, really, of all the disciples. It's the confession of us, Jesus followers, today too.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm glad you said that, because that confession hasn't changed over all these years. And wherever the word of God is spread, everyone agrees. That's the thing for those who are believers. He is the Christ. He is the Son of Man, no doubt. He acknowledges that, but he's also the Son of the living God, too. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what the devil doesn't want us to believe, right? You know, fine with us thinking Jesus is a good guy or just a prophet or a teacher or whatever, but he's more. He's also the Christ, the Son of the living God. Yeah. And then that recognition in verse 17, that as wonderful as Peter is at his confession, even still Jesus emphasizes why he knows that, why he believes it, right? This has been for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. It's because of God's, ultimately, his gift of faith that Peter's able to confess this. And the same is true for us, you know, that we recognize that Jesus is the Son of God, the Christ. It's for the very same reason. It's because God has revealed it to us too.
And that may be, Matt, that's also another reason for the nuance of the "you all." Who do you all say that I am? Because, see, the danger is we begin to think that this faith is our work. It's what we're doing. It's my confession. It's what I've said. And I have a sneaking suspicion you're going to show what happens when we have that kind of focus. Because it's always good to remember, no, if we have faith, that is what God has given us, the Father who is in heaven. And, of course, we know he gives it to us through what we're doing right now, by going to his words, his confession, what he says is true. But that's so important that, no, we don't begin this way. It doesn't come out of flesh and blood. No. In fact, that's the thing. This is a powerful gift that God gives us, to believe that Jesus is the Christ and the Son of the living God. That's a gift of the Father. Don't ever forget that.
Yeah, and I think it's not because Peter is smarter or even more faithful or a better guy. No, far from it. And same for us. It's not the matter. John or smarter or better guys. No, not at all. And as you alluded to, after this confession of faith, you know, Peter messes up big time, right? He tries to prevent Jesus from going to the cross. And Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan." So, no, it's not about Peter. It's not about Peter, but it's about the Father's work, God's work in Peter's life, as he gives faith and reveals to him who Jesus is, just as he has for us through his word, through his spirit.
And I wonder, Matt, this is probably reading more into it than I should, but I wonder if that doesn't have something to do with the play on Peter's name we have here, because he asks Simon Peter, Mark tells us, of course, Simon was his given name. Peter is the nickname Jesus gives him. And I don't know if you're going to get into that or not. But anyway, it's interesting that, yeah, that's the name Jesus gave him. But then when he speaks, when Jesus answers Simon Bar-Jonah, Simon, son of Jonah, that's his earthly name. And maybe that's why Jesus says, you know what? You're Simon Bar-Jonah, but this, you didn't get this from Simon Bar-Jonah. This isn't from your flesh and blood. No, no. You're Simon Peter because of what God and I, through my word, have given you.
Yeah, I think that's kind of interesting to think about. You know, Simon Bar-Jonah, that's his name. Peter, you know, for us, there's a lot of guys out there named Peter, right? But it seems like at this time, no one was named Peter.
Oh, is that right?
That was not a name.
Oh, I did not know that.
So Cephas, Peter, not really a name.
Huh.
This is where it starts. Now, all of a sudden, you know, centuries later, people are still being named Peter, but it's because of this conversation. His name's Simon. So it wasn't common for someone to be called the rock or a rock, Peter. But it does, after this, it is, right? So I think that's fascinating. You know, this is a unique nickname. It's not like, you know, you're Simon Bar-Jonah and I'm going to call you Bob now. You know, this is another guy's name. No, Peter is very unique.
It's a very special.
He gives it. Yeah, exactly. So let's look at that, John. Let's take a close look. So that's in verse 18. So why don't you just go ahead and read verse 18?
And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock, play on words there, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it.
Yeah. So Jesus says, I tell you, you are Peter, and the Greek word there, I'm sure you know John, Petros, and on this rock, different form of that word, Petra, I will build my church. So it's not the exact same word there. The reason this is important is because, you know, some have made the claim that, you know, the rock upon which the church is built is Peter himself, the man. And we say, oh, wait a second here. That's not what Jesus says. He doesn't say, you are Peter, and on Peter I will build my church. No, he intentionally uses a different word here. You're Peter, Petros, and on this rock, Petra, I will build my church. So, you know, certainly the church is related to Peter, and we would say his confession of faith in Jesus as the Christ, but yet the church isn't built on Peter, that individual, that person. Because as we pointed out, if we're built on Peter, we're in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Because as we pointed out, he's called Satan in just a few verses. So, but certainly Peter's confession of faith and who Jesus is. Now, that's a rock to build on, right? Jesus Christ and who he is.
It's interesting in here. You were talking about, so the one Peter that is the let me look it up here again. That is the masculine. So that's what you would assume, right? You're naming a guy, you're going to give a masculine name. And the word rock, however, is in the feminine, which also is the church there, the word for church. It's also a feminine form, which reminds me that, the church is called the bridegroom.
Yeah.
The bridegroom. And that's the thing. Again, the church is a passive thing. Mm-hmm. We receive the blessings. The things come to us. I just was playing around with the forms of the words there.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of the word church, so it's ecclesia is the Greek word here. So there is this is only just one of two times that this word is used in the Gospels.
Isn't really?
John? Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So, the other time is in the Gospel of Matthew. It's chapter 18, so it's in a couple chapters. And it's that whole speech about forgiving each other, right? You know, and if someone sins against you and, you know, you take it to the church is the next step, right?
Huh.
So that's that word ecclesia used there too. But that's the only times in the Gospels that the word for church, ecclesia, is used. So kind of interesting. So this is kind of a big deal that Jesus chooses to use that word in connection to this confession of faith.
And it matches up with the question, but who do you all? Who do you all? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because again, ecclesia is the gathering of everyone who believes that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God.
Yeah, so it's not just on this rock I will build you, or singular, or the Christian, but no, you all, the church. Yeah, and then a beautiful promise in that verse too, right? I will build my church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. You know, what a beautiful promise.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that to keep in mind, that doesn't mean that, you know, an individual congregation, if it closes or experiencing heartache, you know, oh, well, Jesus is lying, the gates of hell are prevailing. Well, no, he's talking about the church, right? The Holy Christian Church, universal church. No, the gates of hell will not prevail against it. When Christ returns, the church will be ready to welcome him back in faith. And what a beautiful promise that is, right? What a comfort we have in that promise. The gates of hell will not prevail against it.
And I think it's a reminder that while I pray all of our listeners do have individual personal faith, that we really do need the church. We need the community, the gathering of people who have this confession, because we need their help. We need their support, if nothing else, so that we have a place to gather and receive the Lord's Supper.
This mutual encouragement and the conversation and the praying for one another, singing together, and the list goes on and on, right? We need each other. And I think the very last verse here speaks to that too. Another reason why we need each other. Verse, 19. If you could read that, John.
Yeah. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven.
Yeah. So here's another reason the church is pretty important. Jesus speaking to, not just Peter, but to the disciples and by extension to his church, including us, the people of God. We call it sometimes the office of the keys. Maybe our listeners have heard of that phrase. This is where that phrase comes from. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven, right? Whatever you bind on earth or will be bound in heaven, whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. So basically, whatever you forgive on earth is also forgiven in heaven. So he gives this precious gift to his church, to us as Christians, to be able to extend forgiveness to others, which we could spend a whole episode talking about.
Oh my goodness,
But boy, what a beautiful gift, this office of the keys that we are given. Thanks be to God. And then for pastors, then, to carry that out publicly, right, to be called to a certain congregation where, we, guys like us, have the privilege of announcing that word of forgiveness to people, whether it's in corporate worship or individually, individual confession, absolution, what a gift. Now, that doesn't mean that only pastors can forgive sins. No, not at all. No, Christians, we're given... we can extend Christ's words of forgiveness in our vocations, especially when it's someone who's sinned against us. So what a precious gift to the church and the office of the keys as well.
Yeah, we have a term for that called the mutual consolation of the brethren.
Yeah.
We Lutherans love to come up with terms, but it's just what you said.
Yeah.
The fact that, this power to forgive, it's been given to all of us. Again, not by flesh and blood, but by the Father in heaven.
Yeah. So that's it, John. A lot from this account, this exchange between Peter and Jesus. And any last words as you reflect on that
Going back to what you said before, the thing you need to remember, this wasn't because Peter was such a good guy or such an outstanding disciple. In fact, in the very next section, he will directly contradict his confession, which is why it was so important to learn. No, this wasn't from you, Peter, but this was a gift from the Father, which again is why we all really need to have that word, that church, that community of saints, because it's not something we can hold on our own.
Yeah. Amen. All right. Thanks, John.
And thank you, Matt. This has been Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.